Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Percussion Pedagogy Podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Dobbs, and thank you for tuning in to our last episode of this series. The responses we've received so far are humbling, and I can't thank you enough for all the support. Our next series will be starting in a few weeks, maybe a little sooner, and is a companion to this one. We'll be talking with top professionals in the field about audio and video recording technology and what you need to get the job done. Whether you're a director, performer, or a classroom teacher, and regardless of your budget size, this series is aimed at getting you the gear you need to reach your goals. I'm excited for this next series, but before we get too carried away, let's finish up this one with a very special guest, Christopher Haugh. Chris Haugh is the assistant band director at Kimmins Junior High School and is in his fourth year as a teacher. Previous to his appointment at Kimmins, and why this episode is so special to me, is because Chris was actually one of my percussion students at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. Right after he graduated, maybe a few months into the summer, Chris interviewed and won the position at Kimmins, which is actually his alma mater. That's pretty sweet. Chris has done some incredible work with the students at Kimmins, including winning an honor band showcase concert at the Arkansas All-State Convention after just 1 year of teaching. That's incredible considering that's one of the highest achievements a director can receive within the state of Arkansas. Besides all the awards, honors, and spotlights Chris has received, the most important achievement is the respect and love his students show him. You could see it in the way they communicate with Chris before and after rehearsals, how they interact with him outside of school, and when the students talk about their experiences in band. They love him. The north side of town has reached the heart of music education, not just training exceptional players that love music, which they do, but to create a culture of students that have learned valuable life skills that will carry them on to the next stages of their life. Fun fact, Chris was actually the first person I interviewed for this podcast. However, I decided to save his episode to the very end. Thank you so much, Chris, for being on this podcast, and thank you for the words that you had to say. All right, it's time for me to be quiet and let this young professional do the talking.
Yeah, so the north side of town is also known as the poor side of town. Darby and Kimmins have about 90% free and reduced lunch. Darby has closer to 100% free and reduced lunch, and Kimmins is right there with it. And what that means is our demographic is high poverty. Majority of them do live in situations where money is tight. Oftentimes, they are also working alongside their parents on weekends and also looking after younger siblings because mom and dad have to work a second job or working the graveyard shift. And so that's the situation for a lot of our students. Our system is so unique because in spite of all those challenges, the kids still find a way to make things work. They still find a way to show up to their extracurricular practices. They still are high achieving individually on our regional competition and the state level. And despite all the challenges that face them, they rise up and beyond the expectation every year.
Piggybacking off that and diving into the pandemic that we're all dealing with, can you talk a little bit about their experience? Like, as students, what was it like for them?
It was a large adjustment, I feel like. I mean, as with anyone. But in a high poverty demographic, having to stay at home and away from school affects them more negatively than with those who have access and access to resources and money and not having to worry about a job being lost. I know that this pandemic and being out from the school for so long, for the rest of the, it was like 3 months lost from school. And even though we were doing online teaching, the effects of those 3 months are probably going to be, we're probably going to be able to track the academic performance of this group of students for the rest of their lives. There's going to be ongoing studies, I'm sure, of the effects of this.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And as far as what you were able to do as a teacher, can you maybe we dive into a little bit of that, dealing with these kind of kids that are working all the time, or maybe now stuck at home babysitting, or maybe working two jobs. Can you talk a little bit about what you think they were going through and what you did as a teacher to help them?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so on my end, when we first got out, that was like March, mid-March, it's during spring break time, we had a couple of online lessons prepared, and that was good to go when we first reached our extensions. Like, we're actually going to go one more week after spring break before we come back, just to be safe. I was able to borrow some of my family member's camera setup and his computer setup, and I was able to stream some percussion lessons that I had put together. And I had like a whiteboard, everything. And so I could switch between cameras, and I had a snare drum home, and I was able to stream quite a few lessons that way. And then we also had our Google Classroom. Pretty much all of my school went with Google Classroom as our digital platform. We were getting pretty good engagement as far as student participation and feedback with our assignments at the start. But as time went on, that engagement dropped significantly. And it was difficult because we had the kids that already had A's, and a couple of them were doing work, but then they realized that the grade couldn't go down, they vanished off the face of the earth. We had the kids who had good grades, but because they were good students, they continued to do the work. We had then also the kids who did not have a good grade, but school was not important to them and was not that important to their families, and so they just did not do the work. Mm-hmm. And then we had the, there's some in between where they did some work, they did just enough to maybe raise their grade by a letter grade or so. Mm-hmm. And from my interactions with a lot of the students, it didn't seem like they were too emotionally shaken by the pandemic. I don't think they necessarily realized the extent of what was happening. Just like, when 9/11 happened, I was a little kid. I didn't really understand the ramifications about what had happened. So for our kiddos in the middle school level, I think they sort of understand, but maybe not so much. They were just like, I'm bored. I want to go back to school. From the ones that we could reach.
What were you doing specifically to engage these students?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we did all sorts. Whenever school was in session, the very first thing that we would try to do as far as reaching kids is through Google Classroom. Because before we had left for school, we made sure that every single one of our students were signed up to our Google Classrooms. And then also the next day after we got out from spring break, we drove around the city to make sure that every kid also had an instrument to practice.
And when you say that, not to interrupt, can you just say how many students that was, just so people know?
Close to 300.
Yeah.
To something. So we loaded up when we drove all around and delivered all the instruments to houses and everything. And that took a couple of days to get to everyone, but everyone had an instrument. So we had Google Classroom set up with practice assignments. We had our instruments. So we knew every kid had an instrument. And then my life became a whirlwind of calling and texting parents. On our district, we were told that we had to make some type of contact with the kid or their family every 2 weeks. We are big on social media, so for our band, we utilize Instagram and Facebook often to communicate with our parents. I would jump on Instagram Live occasionally just to try to check up on our students, see how they're doing emotionally. Towards the very end of the school year, we started having home visits. So if there were students that we weren't able to contact, we would add their names to a list. And so our principal and our school resource officer and our assistant principal would make home visits to these kids, particularly the ones that were failing. And so short of knocking down their door, we did a lot.
Yeah, you really hit the streets pretty much. And one thing I really like seeing, I follow your Instagram page all the time, and I forget the specifics, but it was something about you going on the day before and you would say, all right, guys, what are you working on? Just send me a video of anything that you're playing. And then the next day it would be like someone just like doing double bass drum, like rocking out. And then someone like playing trombone to like some marching band music. And you would just like flash up all these different things. And I thought that was so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So one of the things that, again, to try to get them playing, not necessarily even to do work, because sometimes work can feel like just busy work and a check mark that we had, and for our team, that's not our philosophy. Like, we want to cultivate a love for music and playing in our program. And so the Northside of Town, we developed some hashtags to try to get kids to showcase kind of what they were doing. So for the Kimmins, it was hashtag Kimmins Band Practice Jams. A lot of Kimmins, especially the alum of Kimmins, alumni, they did put a lot of videos together. A lot of times they did the a cappella app and they were playing, you know, four different parts and putting them all together. And that was another way to try to get kids to keep playing. Doesn't matter what, as long as they're playing.
What good came from this pandemic for you, whether it's personal? Maybe something happened to you or as a teacher. What good came from this?
Well, on the teaching side, it really forced me to be creative in the ways that I can reach students. And it really pushed, I feel like, if anyone who really loved teaching, this presented a huge challenge and you had to step up to it. There was growth. It was a bit uncomfortable. But for me, I know that I'm going to be better prepared for fall if we're not going to be back in school. So the whole online teaching, while at first I was really kind of nervous about it, and to be honest, I still am, but I feel confident that, especially with the experience I've gained from the last few months of school, that I'll be able to do it again. And it's just hard, just because, you know, as music teacher, and I particularly work often with beginners, I'm just kind of I worry about how am I gonna teach beginners not in person. How can I fix things if I'm not there with them? And I'm sure that's a question that a lot of people are nervous about, but from the experiences that I've had in the last few months of school, I know I'm going to be okay. Another thing on the teaching side, having to do online teaching and having that be the expectation and the, you know, so-called new norm, it really brought to light the issue of access and accessibility for low income and poverty families. And so that was a huge conversation for our district about, okay, if this is going to be what we're expecting of our teachers, how are we going to make this happen for our kids that don't have the same level of access to the resources? And our district had a huge push to help kids, those kids who couldn't get internet. And I think probably as a society, we're probably going to need to figure out that answer on the national level too. You know, in order to be the best advocate that we can for our students and for our programs, is to find a way to have a seat at the table whenever big decisions are being made. And that always takes me back to Hamilton, the musical. You know, I want to be in the room where it happens.
Yeah.
And try to find ways to show leadership on your campus, to get to know your administration. Don't see them as adversaries, but see them as allies. Even if you don't feel that way, they need to feel that way.
Yes.
For me, I'm in a fortunate situation where the Fort Smith School District is a huge advocate for the arts and for their extracurricular activities. And even my principal, even though he'll admit he doesn't know anything about music, he is still an advocate for our programs, because we communicate, we take up leadership positions within the school itself, and we do what we can to keep ourselves relevant. And, you know, even though I'm just a fourth-year teacher, you know, but I feel like that is something that more people need to hear.
How do you think the future looks for us as music educators? What is our purpose? What is our role in this pandemic, or just moving forward in general?
I believe that we are an integral part of a well-rounded education. I don't think that it is possible for education to be complete without music and the arts. And we need to be able to be advocates for our program, for our existence, because the kids need that, us too. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people lose track of that or lose sight of how valuable our programs are. Sometimes we are the only thing and the only reason why a kid will come back to school. And sometimes we're the only reason why a kid will learn any math, because they want to stay in band still. Or, you know, and I think it's our purpose. I think it should be our mission, of course, to be advocates for our program, to fight for our existence for the sake of our students now and moving forward. So even despite all the challenges that we are facing, and again, as a band director who works with beginners, even though that's going to be a challenge and it's probably going to put me in a situation where I'm not going to be so happy about it, but I'm going to be here and I'm going to do everything in my power to ensure that that kid gets the best education that I can offer them. And so he has for purpose, to not give up. I think we have to keep going for the sake of art for our kiddos.
The Percussion Pedagogy Podcast is engineered and edited by me, Tommy Dobbs. The music you hear was created by my good friend Ryan Robinson. Our logo and all graphic design work was created by Janelle Ann. And finally, this podcast is a product of Hindex Productions. That means every episode has to be approved by these two lovely Yorkies right here. So, what do you think, fellas?